guests, all from India, but all look like professional people. They are not, as far as I can tell, and I was told, Christian. But it became a ritual. There must have been 15 of these people as I was walking into the ground. They were just walking out. They saw me, thus accoutred. Well, the custom is, this is part of their religion, to get down on their knees and touch the feet of this, you want to call him, that's quite a word, man of God. And then they put their head down, and they want you to touch their head. So, can't lose. So, and I came to know one of my Jesuits in Calcutta. And, I could tell he was straight, as we say. But he was in street clothes. And I dropped all kinds of hints. And a simple thing, does that make sense? Here are people who respect whatever their ideology may be. My gosh, the least you can do is to present yourself as not just another man on the street, but as one who is, by profession, dedicated to the service of God. And in fact, I'm getting back to my India part of the lecture. This reached the point where I happened to visit a hospital at one of the missions of charity and major surgery. And it happened to be South Suburban Clinic. And same thing happened. He's a Hindu, and I introduced myself immediately. Without any further ado, he went down and touched my toes, and asked me to touch his head, so touched his head. And then I told him that I sometimes write books. I had no idea. Dr. Santanu, and he had ever published a book. Oh, he was just so thrilled that I asked him. He said, yes, this month, my first book. So I got a copy. Well, I'm going to follow up on this book. I read it. By the way, I promised to get sales in America for this book. It's a book, Notable Man in ENT. Eye, ear, nose, is it ear, nose, and throat? See? So, at any rate, so he just didn't want to let me go. He wanted to talk. So one of the sisters said, Father, you're quite a salesman. Salesman, nothing, just the faith. So, and Reformation. Then, a big lesson, more than a lesson, a whole aspect of our Catholic faith called development of doctrine. We believe, as you know, that God made one revelation for the whole world, called the public revelation, which closed with the end of the apostolic age, with the death of St. John the Apostle, around 100 AD. That's the end of what we call public revelation for the world. all other revelations, called private, even though mighty publicized, like Isabella. But the only revelation that is necessary for the world was completed. However, the completion was in terms of content in the what God has revealed has already been completed. However, subjectively, in terms of understanding, grasping the meaning of this revelation, seeing it clearly, seeing with complete clarity and accuracy, that keeps going on and will go on until the end of time. We call that development of doctrine. In other words, things that we believe now as infallible doctrine, like Mary's Assumption, on much more than 100 years ago, it was a truth of faith, but not, of course, defined by the Church. See, with Mary's Assumption. So that, what the history of the Church teaches us is that the Church grows in her grasp of what God has revealed, and especially among those who are trying to live that faith most faithfully. Then I have real presence here. If there is one thing that church history should show us, already at the end of the first century, the earliest Christians who wrote on the subject believed unqualifyingly that once the words of consecration are pronounced, and the priest said, "This is my body, this is my blood," what had been bread and wine become the living Jesus Christ. To read in Ignatius of Antioch, date 107 A.D. And then century after century, then by the end of the first millennium, when the first heresies came to the surface, and even, for example, to see how as the faith became weaker in the real presence, respect and reverence for the Holy Eucharist diminished accordingly. And thus, for example, communion of the hand. In the very early church, following Christ's example on Holy Thursday night, but then, communion in the hand have to be withdrawn to maintain reverence for the real presence. And in all the things that we, over these centuries, have, past tense, come to associate with the sacredness of the Holy Eucharist, that it has been so widely and is being so widely profaned. And the same, for example, the sacrament of confession. The Church's history shows, from the very beginning, there were private confession of sins and absolution. Then, for example, devotion to Our Lady has remained constant over the centuries, and we can say this, as you'll find out from your history of the Church, as devotion to Our Lady waned, so would also wane faith in the most fundamental doctrines of Christianity, like Christ's divinity. In other words, Marian piety, I say this safely, is a barometer of Catholic orthodoxy. Then, unborn life. As soon as Christianity took hold in the Roman Empire, and I would say simultaneously, insofar as Christianity took hold in the Roman Empire, three things disappeared. child deception, divorce and remarriage, and abortion. One of my hopes is that this course in church history will wake us all up. In other words, Christianity is in a state of decadence. What a safe word in our country. And how well, how pathetically well the Holy Father knows it. Will there be some questions? Can one soul in purgatory pray for another soul in purgatory while they are both there together? Yes. In other words, can they pray for each other? Yes. Or can one soul in purgatory pray for a stranger in purgatory? Yes. Yes, they can pray for one another. They cannot, however, in any way merit for themselves. What can a person do to help himself or herself not to fear martyrdom? Both white martyrdom and especially red martyrdom. Father, my spirit is willing, but my flesh is weak. Well, there's only one fear I have when I speak on this subject, and that is that my audience will think I'm being rhetorical. I'm not. I'm not indulging in metaphors or figures of speech. The blood of martyrs is the seed of the church. So it has been, so it is, and so it will be until the end of time. For a year, here in Detroit University, I came to know a father, Matthew Kim, K-I-M. 28 years in a Chinese prison. But he ordained by a bishop who, well, happened to be in the same prison. Oh, now this man, the seminarian for so many years, just about finished his studies when the Chinese threw him into jail. So he was ordained in prison. But I cannot tell you what a thrill and this is, day after day, in conversation with a real living martyr. But he would say that's the way it is. They have spoken on the need for Catholic families to homeschool their children. As my family, is engaged in homeschooling, how do you square this with the Catholic Church's precept to use the Catholic school system? Oh. That precept has to have two explanations. Number one, the first, primary, and most important Catholic school is the home. Secondly, even where Catholic schools as institutions of learning are part of the Church's strong recommendation, not to say precept, that is always conditional. Conditional on what? Does the school or schools in question conform to the, well, the faith, Catholic faith of the parents? That in fact is brought out very plainly with embarrassing plainness in the catechism. Parents have a right to those schools that will support their own faith. And they, the parents, are to judge whether a school conforms or not.